You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Don Binney Flight Path is a richly illustrated account of the life and work of one of New Zealand's most iconic artists. Painter, printmaker, teacher, writer and ornithologist, that's someone who studies birds, Don Binney was a mercurial presence on the New Zealand cultural scene from the time of his rise to fame in the early 1960s. His unmistakable stylized depictions of birds have come to define an era in the development of the nation's art. Drawing extensively on Binney's letters, journals and other writings, award-winning author and curator Gregory O'Brien in this book takes us into the world of this gifted but paradoxical artist. Richly illustrated with Binney's paintings, drawings and prints alongside photographs and documentary materials, this is the first full-length monograph of one of New Zealand's most important 20th century artists. To hear about the book and how Greg put it all together, I caught up with him for Various Artists. Here we are now. So we are talking about Flight Path, this quite incredible and lengthy book that you've put together on the life and work of Don Binney. To start off with, I mean, it's a huge book and obviously a huge amount of work. Why did you decide to write or compile this book in the first place?
Oh, look, I'm not sure. There's a whole lot of different things. I mean, when I was growing up, you know, I grew up in Auckland and I had a print of a Don Binney painting, Pippi Whararoa Mating, just above my bed head for my entire childhood. So I kind of wondered if maybe that sort of entered my dream life and my subconscious or something. But I knew about them. I knew those pictures. They're part of my subconscious. I had a fascination with him. I was also always very interested in his attachment to the west coast of, you know, the Auckland coastline, to Te Hinga in particular. And you know, I grew up surfing at Piha and Karikari and Bethel's Beach, Te Hinga as well. And so he sort of, I seemed to be a presence for, you know, all through my life. And then in recent years, you know, I've worked as a curator and I think I developed quite a specific kind of fascination with that kind of, that generation of New Zealand artists, who I kind of think of as probably being like my godfathers or something, you know. I've written about Pat Hanley and about Ralph Hawtery and Rosalie Gascoigne, who moved to Australia, and quite a few of those people who I sort of think are the real pioneers, but also the kind of people that I think probably built my subconscious brain and certainly my artistic kind of sort of sensibility. So Binney was part of that story. And then, I was in conversation with a few people, you know, for a number of years, really, about the possibility of picking up the book, because it was a pretty big sort of job to pick up. And then one day I decided to do it, and I did. So there you go. It's certainly been the biggest thing I've ever done in my life.
You describe in the book the huge amount of archival material that you've had to work through, and, you know, some that you also haven't been able to get to. How did you go about approaching Binney's archive?
Yeah, it's kind of funny, that thing, yeah, because his studio is still intact. He died 10 years ago. He died in 2012. And the family basically have kept all the papers together, and there were a hell of a lot of them, because he was quite a hoarder, so he kept everything, from old parking tickets to, bus tickets to, preparatory drawings for paintings. You know, he sort of kept the good and the bad and the relevant and the irrelevant. So, how I approached it, basically there was quite a lot of time to do it. I mean, I started the project in about 2016-17. There was a lot of planning in 2018. I spent a bit of time in the archive, and then COVID came along in 2020. So at that point, I sort of changed my plan a bit and actually took a car up to Auckland, because I live in Wellington, and took back a whole lot of the boxes of Binney's correspondence, you know, which, as I say in the book, sort of runs to millions of words. I mean, there's letters, there's journals, there's diaries, there's log books, there's unpublished novels, there's one published novel, there's poetry, there's sort of goddamn everything, you know. So so basically I read a lot of it. I didn't read all of it, because that would take you years and years and years. I sort of sorted it out. Some sorting had been done with some of the material. Damien Skinner, who wrote a fantastic shorter book on Binney back in 2003, he had done a little bit of tidying up, and he'd also done some great interviews with Binney, which I used as source material in the book quite a lot. So So he was a bit of a godsend. Also Warwick Brown was another person that had gone into the archive and sort of started to kind of corral some of it into kind of usable bits. So I don't know, how do you approach such a thing? Intuitively, there's probably quite a lot of luck in it. You know, one chances upon things, and it's just amazing. You've come upon the most amazing things that fill in gaps, that explain things, that, you know, tell you things. So I guess, yeah, you know, I just sort of followed my nose, really. But I do think the book is a lot about Don Binney, the man. I mean, that was the thing about it. Once I started getting into the archive and exploring his oeuvre, you know, all the paintings, they are such an expression of an individual, his life, his autobiography, his family background, his temperament, his troubles, you know, and his kind of...
How has your understanding of Binney as a person, Binney the man, changed over... Well, you must have worked on this for maybe seven years?
Oh, I suppose he just became real. He became quite a heavy weight on my back, you know, like he was a big man in every regard, you know, and I think... you know, one comes out of it with a sense of kind of almost, you know, sort of almost a sense he's come to almost become part of my family, or so he's definitely become like an uncle as well as a godfather or something. He sort of, he sort of impressed me. I mean, there were things he did that I thought were amazing. I do think he genuinely had a deep grasp of Māori tanga, of, you know, of the whole Māori tradition as it existed out on Auckland's west coast, you know, and this was back in the 60s, you know, before people really started making a public noise about that sort of thing. Mm. But I think he really had it. He had a great respect and understanding and affinity with Māori culture, and I think that was something that surprised me, because I did meet him when he was alive, and he was the most English of fellows. You know, he was a bit of an Anglophile, you know, a high Anglican, that kind of a... I think I say in the book he was a bit of a rumpole. He was almost the kind of figure you could imagine as a, you know, as a high court judge in a television series, you know, set in England. You know, it's in the 19th century. He's Dickensian almost. So I guess he was a larger than life figure, but actually deeply in this world and deeply living within the times that he operated in. You know, I think, you know, his heyday, I guess, was the 60s and the 70s, and me, the works and the man and his story tell you a hell of a lot about what was going on in the culture and the cultures and, you know, in the country at the time.
One of the most interesting things that I've picked up on in reading the book is this relationship between Binney's later work and his childhood sketches. It's quite fascinating how those have seemed to have permeated his life, and that he's always seen the world through birds. What do you think it was about birds that so captured him?
Gosh, I don't know. I think in the book I say, you know, I mean, he was an only child. And I think as a child in a slightly sort of... probably a slightly tense and fractious home environment. You know, he did, one of his escapes from that was to go, you know, bird watching, was to become a, you know, an amateur ornithologist and spend Saturdays, you know, hidden under a leafy hedge, you know, watching, you know, sort of, you know, birds arrive from overseas on a mudflat or something. I think he connected with just the sense, you know, the bird, the single bird in isolation was him. I mean, he was the lone bird, really. So I do think, when I look at those paintings, I do think they're not only this, but I think one little aspect of them is that they are self-portraits. That's him sort of, you know, sort of at one with nature, but also kind of slightly apart from it too. He is sort of the lone bird out there. So I think he did have a kind of quite a strong attachment to them. Again, also, I think he was fascinated with, you know, the indigeneity of New Zealand bird species, of tui and, you know, pipiwhararoa and all these other ones. You know, the fact they were of this place and this was their habitat, you know, so there were all sorts of ideas. He wasn't an environmentalist, as you'll know. You know, so, I mean, he did actually, you know, keep a very close eye on, I guess, the way humanity was modifying habitats for creatures like birds. And he thought of himself as being invariably and passionately on the side of the birds in that exchange. You know, he got, you know, up in arms when they threatened to create a dump, you know, the Auckland City dump at Bethel's Beach, at Te Henga. You know, he because it would have destroyed all sorts of bird habitats as well as destroying the beach for human beings, too, one would have to say. You know, and he got angry and he got involved. And in a way, I do think his whole life's painting, this is another aspect of it, you could see as a bit like a kind of protest banner raised on behalf of birds and nature and probably human beings that want to live in harmony with nature rather than just sort of exploiting it and digging it up and selling it, you know.
If readers could go away with a picture of who Don Binney was and the legacy that he's left, do you think there's a way to encapsulate that in a few words?
What does he mean to us now? I suppose that was one of the main reasons I did the book too, was, I did think he's so relevant. I mentioned before, it seemed to me he had a very deep understanding of biculturalism, also beyond that, a kind of multiculturalism too. But he was also an environmentalist, you know, in the 70s at the time that the whole notion of, you know, conservation was sort of still forming and gaining momentum. And, you know, that was the period when the Values Party was formed, you know, which later morphed into the Green Party, you know. So he was around it in a way, the birthing of a kind of an environmental movement. And with the book, I suppose I sort of think, you know, here's work that's beautiful to look at, that's gorgeous, it's alluring, that's celebratory of the physical world, but it's also work that's full of, ideas to do with sustainable environments, to do with habitats, to do with balance. You know, the bird's all about balance, and within the compositions, the bird is sort of balanced. It's at the right height, it's at the right angle. You know, and in a way, I think what he's saying with humanity is we've all got to be like that too. We've got to, you know, ride the currents. We've got to get it right. If we don't, we sort of perish, you know. And I think his notion of, you know, sort of birds was, I don't know, yeah, kind of profound, but very metaphoric too, you know. I mean, without meaning one thing. I think his art presents a lot of ideas. And I do think possibly the danger is people do think of Binney as the bird painter, and it's just like some kind of quaint sort of offspring from the ornithological bird art tradition. But it's not. He was a conceptual contemporary artist. He was steeped in modernism. He was taught by Colin McCann. He went through Elam. He travelled the world. He absorbed influences from everywhere. Importantly, from Mexico, which I make quite a lot of in the book, because I think he got an incredible jolt of energy and illuminating kind of thinking, really, from his experiences there in the late 60s. But anyway, so what he offers, I think, is a really powerful kind of account of being alive here, but one that I think is worth everyone exploring. And certainly my book won't, it's a big book, but it won't be the last word about Binney. I mean, there are other Binneys I think one could, you know, keep looking at. You could do a whole book, really, I think, on his connection to the environmental movement. You know, I mean, I do chart that through my book, but there's a whole lot more. I mean, his life was so rich in plots and subplots that there's certainly, you know, not too many stones were left unturned, but I think in writing this book I was aware that he's a pretty significant figure, and I think with any significant figure it's going to take more than one book to kind of wrap him up. So I haven't finished him off. I'd like to think I've started him up, and I do hope the book will lead to more exhibitions. I'd love the Auckland Art Gallery to do a big retrospective. You know, Binney's never had that, but he deserves that. His work is so powerful, relevant, and it's also part of, I mentioned earlier, it was a part of my subconscious, but I think it's part of the subconscious, you know, of so many New Zealanders from different generations.
That was Gregory O'Brien speaking with me about Don Binney, Flight Path, his new book on the life and legacy of Binney.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.